This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. Well, when I was young, was so much younger than today. I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find a change of mind and open up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me?
Hey, there you go, little Beatles to wake you up this morning. On a Monday morning, here we go again. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and my partner, Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us. It is Monday, May the 8th, and this month is moving along, is it not? We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Simon Hankinson of the Heritage Foundation. We're going to talk about the ending of Title 42 and how he says it means an end to a secure southern border. Well, I don't know how secure he thinks it's been, but it doesn't look very secure to me right now. But apparently it's going to get even worse. And a new ABC Washington Post poll is very bad news for Joe Biden. Not only have his numbers tanked again, but now Donald Trump would easily beat him for president. ABC News, Washington Post. Ed's burying his head in his hands here with that news.
I was going to say, you would beat him.
Anyway, not only that, the Supreme Court is now going to start issuing some big, big decisions. They're going to be coming out every Monday between now and early July, including on things like that student loan handout deal, and affirmative action, and also workplace speech rights versus LGBTQ plus rights. So lots of things. We're going to take a look at some of the things the Supreme Court is going to be ruling on. Stay tuned for that. And we got a good one in our ultimate top 10. The top 10 vehicles with the longest lifespan. Now, I think this is a good one. Ed thinks he knows. We'll find out if he does. So lots going on. Thank you for being with us. Yeah, this new poll, Ed, I know you're just berserk with sadness. A stunning new ABC News Washington Post poll, it came out yesterday. It contains nothing but bad news for our buddy Joe Biden and good news for the Donald. According to the survey, Biden trails Trump by 7 points in a hypothetical 2024 general election. Respondents were asked whether they would definitely vote for Trump or Biden, probably vote for Trump or Biden, or vote for somebody else, or not vote at all. Among those who definitely prefer one candidate over the other, Trump leads Biden 36-32, but when those probably voting are added, Trump's margin balloons to 7 points, as he holds a 45-38 advantage over Biden. Here's what I would say to that. What took people so long to figure out that Biden should not be losing to Donald Trump?
He's really fading.
He's fading.
Last month or so, or maybe last couple of months?
He's really losing. I think he's losing touch. I hate to say that.
You talk
about somebody that really is not fit anymore.
He called Michelle Obama the former vice president the other day.
Oh, she wasn't?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. He didn't know where he had just come from when somebody asked him how he enjoyed his trip or what was his last trip. He couldn't remember that he went to Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, what was the last country you were at? Something like that you can remember.
No, don't tell me. Let's see.
It's the Easter Bunny.
Where's the Easter Bunny when I need him? The poll found that Biden would fare only a little better if the Republican nominee were Ron DeSantis. So apparently now, for a while, DeSantis was doing better against Biden than Trump was. But apparently Trump is now doing better against DeSantis. I mean, against Biden than DeSantis
is. You know it's coming then. Something is going to have to jiggle this a little bit back in Biden's favor. Meaning, if you can't get his numbers up, you have to lower Trump's.
Oh, of course. Well, they've been
so trying. So something's going to shake loose. Something's going to happen. It's been too quiet.
Too quiet?
It's been too quiet.
How many different things is Trump having to testify on?
Well, look,
they've been going after him.
It's constant. I'm just saying it's been constant, so they're going to keep it going.
Well, of course they're going
to. Guaranteed, next couple of weeks, something's going to surface somewhere.
Something's got to give.
We're already working on the shooter that was out in Texas yesterday that he had a patch on his arm that could tie him to white supremacists and right wing.
Really?
By the way, a white supremacist named Gonzalez.
Yeah, he's not a white guy. He's a Hispanic. That is, in fact, I'm not even sure he speaks English very well from what I read. But anyway, just wanted to finish on this. Biden would only fare a little better against DeSantis. He's tied with DeSantis among those definitely backing a particular candidate. But include the probablys, DeSantis is ahead by 5 points over Biden. So either way, Biden's approval numbers are nothing short of dismal. Only 36% of voters approve of the job that he is doing. He's lucky to get 36%. I'm not even sure anybody knows what it is he is doing these days. Now, the 36% is compared to 56% who feel he's not doing a very good job. That's down 6 points from February. So it's pretty much bad news all the way around for our friend Biden. Ominously for Biden, Trump holds a commanding lead on the economy. When voters were asked, who do you think would do a better job handling the economy? Trump, when he was president, or Biden during his presidency, 54% for Trump, 36% for Biden.
You ask those people why they don't want Trump back here, they'll give you an honest answer. They don't like his tweets.
Yeah, they don't like...
We don't want him back in president because we don't like his tweets.
Well, they don't like his... A lot of them just don't like the way he handles himself. It has nothing to do with the job he does as president.
And he's a racist.
That's the truth.
He's a racist, remember, because he called that virus a Chinese virus, which, by the way, wound up being a Chinese virus.
In his job as the president, I think it's hard to find things he did wrong.
But it's okay for Biden to call the balloon Chinese. That's all right.
Yeah, so, I mean, now people are maybe finally starting to see that even if they were rooting for Joe Biden, that clearly it's not going well for the guy. And like you say, when was the last time we've seen him? You know, he's supposed to be running for president again, right? He's buried himself even deeper into the basement or wherever he goes. You don't see him doing anything recently.
You know how when you got a big event coming up, you take a long, hard nap? Maybe that's what he's doing for the next year. I don't know.
Sounds like he's hibernating, actually, for the summer. Real quickly, before we go to break, and I'm looking forward, by the way, to talking about Title 42 with Simon Hankinson in just a few minutes. But Tara Reid, do you remember who Tara Reid is? Does that name ring a bell to you, Ed?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. She has accused Biden of sexually assaulting her in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to be testifying before Congress. Did you know that? They're dusting her off and bringing her... The Republican House is bringing her in.
Sounds like the Republican.
Why don't we just get all of the accusers? We got the accusers for Trump on one side, and we'll get the accusers for Biden on the other. Why don't we get them all together in the same room? Let's just interview every one of them.
Seems the Republicans have learned something from the Democrats
there
now.
There you go.
Doesn't matter. Bring them up.
Here's what Tara Reid, she's tweeted a very cryptic message on the eve of her testimony before Congress. She said, I want to make something clear. If something happens to me, all roads lead to Joe Biden. She said, Joe Biden and DNC political machine threats, bullying and intimidation over the last 3 years will not work. So let's hope she gets to testify and something doesn't happen to her. We'll find out. Anyway, let's take our break. When we come back, Title 42 is about to end. And Simon Hankinson says it may mean an end to a secure southern border.
Sugar, oh honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Berhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Berhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Ain't it
good to... This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Monday at Freedom Works and delighted to have Simon Hankinson join us. He is a senior research fellow for border security with the Heritage Foundation, and he has penned a piece for MSN, Why the End of Title 42 Means the End to a Secure Border. Simon, welcome to Freedom Works.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. You know, so many people are worried sick about the end of Title 42. And if you watch, at least if you watch Fox News, you can see the stream of people lining up and pouring in and walking along and the whole bit. I mean, things have been just terrible. Everybody knows the border is border is porous. But now we got the end of Title 42, I believe, on Thursday. Tell us what's going to happen.
Well, Title 42 is this health measure that was passed in, I think, the 40s. And essentially what it did is in March of 2020, it allowed the CDC to shut down the border for COVID concerns. And what it does is, I call it Tony the Bouncer. You know, you want to get into a club, and he just looks at you and says, no, I don't think so. There's no paperwork. There's no appeal. There's no application. The other law that's always been in place is what they call Title 48, which is all the immigration law. And that does contain measures for detaining people who arrive illegally, for giving them expedited removal or a longer process if that's deemed appropriate. Problem is that system has been completely swamped by the Biden administration's message that the borders are open. So people are showing up with basically hopeless. I mean, they don't have a case for asylum. They're just trying to get a job. And the government is letting them in, punting them off into the interior of the country, and they're going to be here with us for, you know, 5-10 years, probably indefinitely.
Yeah.
Title 42 is kind of a Band-Aid, and it was about to expire one way or another sooner or later.
Indeed. I've never come to understand exactly why the Democrats in the administration under Joe Biden have wanted the border to be as porous as it is. Is it because they just didn't want to do the same thing that Trump was doing, which was to try to make the border more secure, and they didn't want to be judged as, you know, doing the same thing? Is it just a matter of pride? Do they really think all of these people pouring in are going to make a difference when it comes to voting for Democrats? I mean, what do you think is behind the ignorance of doing something at the border?
I think you put your finger on it originally. You know, every president gets elected with kind of a coalition of support, and you have to sort of pass the responsibility for some of your policies off to these lobbying groups and interest groups. I think in the case of the Biden administration, there was an ideological core of people who fundamentally just don't believe in borders. They believe in a kind of one world. You know, everybody has a right to migrate wherever they want to live. And then you combine that with this visceral hatred of everything that Trump did. You know, we could, I'm sure, find things to criticize in President Trump, as we can with all administrations. But there's this reaction that doesn't seem to take into account whether or not the policies are good or bad. It's just the fact that he enacted them means they've got to go. You combine that open borders ideology that a lot of the people running immigration policy in the Biden administration have with this just visceral hatred of Trump, and they demolished everything. They didn't really look at kind of downstream what's going to happen if we get rid of the Remain in Mexico program or asylum cooperative agreements or stop building the wall, stop enforcing the law. They just did it, and now they're finding out what happened.
Yes, indeed. We're talking with Simon Hankinson. He is a senior research fellow for border security at the Heritage Foundation, and we are talking about the end of Title 42, which comes along Thursday. Simon, a lot of these mayors of these northern cities all of a sudden are complaining about all of these illegal immigrants that are ending up, you know, being dropped off in their cities, Chicago, New York, Washington, and a bunch of other places. Do you think that kind of pressure, and they're Democratic mayors, do you think this kind of pressure is going to make the Biden administration think twice and maybe decide to start taking some kind of action? What do you think?
Well, the optimist in me wants to believe that. You know, you can only blame the other guy for so long. Biden's been in power for 2 years. So to keep blaming Trump for every single problem seems to be stretching credulity, even for the mass of people who on the left who supported him. Yeah, you're seeing people. Mayor Adams was trying to deflect blame onto the border cities. You know, as if somehow El Paso, which at one point had more so-called asylum seekers in it than it did people, it has deliberately caused this problem, and that Texas is not doing its bit. I've been down to the border. I've been down to Arizona and Texas in the last 6 months. And believe me, they're doing their bit. They are inundated with indigents, essentially, and there's absolutely no limit. So I can totally understand why they would want to share some of that pain. Mayor Adams says he's $4.2 billion in the hole dealing with these illegal aliens. The shelters are full. They've rented hotels. They're now busing them up to other counties surrounding New York, and those counties are not happy because they have to provide schooling, medical care, social services, and all kinds of things that they haven't budgeted for.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. You know, the interesting thing is those places like New York, Chicago, and some of these other cities are supposedly sanctuary cities. But, you know, the first sign of a few busloads of people being dropped off, and it seems like there's a panic. What about the Biden administration's decision to send about 1,900 military troops down to the border?
Well, you know, I think that's one of those things that sounds more important than it is. I mean, we're not talking about, this is not Delta Force and SEAL Team 6 going down there to do some kind of, you know, covert action. These troops are not going to be on the border trying to stop people coming in. I mean, even if they were, 1,500, that's like one every other mile on our border with Mexico, and fewer if you count Canada. They're going to go down there, probably going to be taking over some of the basic logistical stuff so that the Border Patrol that's changing diapers and doing social services and handing out luggage tags can get back to doing that. So it's not a game changer. I really don't understand what the point of it is, other than maybe they think it's an impressive gesture.
You talk about in your report that there are about 1.5 million asylum cases in our immigration system. Of course, that does not include all of the people that are just pouring in and getting away. But and then with thousands more that are being added monthly, is our system so bad that we can't figure out a way of coping with this and doing it right? I mean, it would seem like it's such a, maybe I'm looking at it too simplistically, but if we if we secure the southern border and try to innovate our asylum system so that we can get more people through, isn't that possible? I mean, why is that not possible?
Well, I think the first reality that we have to accept is that there are more people in the world that would like to live in the United States and other developed countries than we can possibly accept in terms of our infrastructure, land mass, and so on. So the supply just is not up to the demand. And we have to have a system that can distinguish between a genuine asylum seeker, you know, like a Jew fleeing the Nazis in the 1930s or a Russian exile fleeing communism in the 1970s. We have to distinguish between those people and guys from Venezuela who just want to get a job. I don't blame those guys for trying.
No.
If I were them, I'd probably want the same thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, just because you want something, I see a Rolls Royce go by, maybe I want that car. It doesn't mean I can just go take it. So I think we have the tools in place. Remain in Mexico was very effective because it required people to wait for their asylum process in Mexico, outside the United States. Right now, the Biden administration has just let somebody in on their say-so. They don't have a criminal check. They don't have a name check. They don't really know who they are. And the people say, well, we're going to claim asylum. And they just sort of fall into this black hole, as you say, of over 1.5 million cases, probably pushing 2 million now.
Yeah.
And there's no prospect of them getting out in the next decade.
I used to think that the rule for asylum seekers was the first country that they come to is the country that
they
can.
That is the rule.
But they're going through Mexico. Look at all these people from Central America. And maybe, and obviously other countries that are coming through Mexico, but they ain't stopping. They're continuing. So they're ignoring. The asylum seekers themselves are breaking the rules.
They absolutely are. And look, I've been down there. I've talked to people. They will say they're not coming because they're afraid of anything. They're coming because they want opportunity. They want jobs. Like I said, I don't blame them. I blame us. It's like not locking your house, not locking your car door. You know, it's the very least you can do. So we already have provisions within our law to make sure that people who pass through safe countries on the way to the United States don't get to sort of shop on which country they want to be safe in. I mean, we saw people down at the border who'd been from Venezuela who'd been settled in other countries like Colombia or Peru for years. We saw Haitians who spent 5 years in another Latin American country. They'd already been given asylum, essentially, given refugee status. And they decided, well, actually, I'd rather be in America. I've got relatives in Miami, or maybe I can get a better job. So that's a blatant abuse of the asylum system. But I would just say it's not that it broke under the natural weight of humanity. It was deliberately broken by this administration's policies, and they have chosen to unleash this chaos on the country, and they're going to have to be responsible for the consequences.
I mean, as far as the Republicans go, I don't know that they have been maybe forceful enough themselves while all of this is going on. Now, I know the executive department, a branch, you know, is in control of our border situation. It comes under the heading of defense and security and all of that kind of thing. But couldn't they, for instance, say, look, we got a Homeland Security guy that needs to be removed, and maybe start some sort of process like an impeachment of Mayorkas? Maybe that would get them off the schneid a little bit.
Well, actually, some of my colleagues here at Heritage have argued very coherently, I think, the case for impeaching Mayorkas. There was some support on the Hill, and some members had floated some bills. And it's definitely a case that can be made. The guy had sworn an oath to protect and defend the Constitution and to carry out the laws of the United States. And they're not doing that. They're just simply not enforcing laws that Congress passed, and they're using their own personal discretion to trump it. I absolutely think that should be done, and it still could be done. I don't think that carries you to the solution, though, because if Mayorkas left, can you imagine Biden? I mean, he chose Kamala Harris as his border czar. How did that work out?
Yeah.
Who would he choose to replace Mayorkas? Is it going to be someone who can competently execute the functions of the job, or is it going to be a clown who's just going to stand up there and tell us the borders are secure when we can see they're not?
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know that we would get anything better. It might be even worse. I don't know how it could be much worse than it is. Simon, we really appreciate your input. Thank you so very much for talking about this huge issue. Hope to talk with you again soon.
Paul's my pleasure.
Yes, sir. All right. Simon Hankinson, Heritage Foundation. Let us take our break. When we come back, the Supreme Court is going to start issuing some big decisions, including on the student loan deal, you know, how we're handing out free loans, etc., affirmative action, workplace speech, all kinds of things. We're going to talk about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Panhellenic News, on air live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. at 106.1 FM. Panhellenic News, radio program from the Panhellenic Federation of Florida. Wednesday at 4 p.m. Greek news, entertainment and culture.
Για νέα αρχή για τον ελληνισμό, μείνετε συντονισμένοι.
Stay tuned.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. Freedom Works, Monday morning. Thank you so very much for tuning in, listening to us. Well, as we look towards California to get a laugh, we got something else going on there that I don't know if it's that funny, but it sure is crazy. The California Reparations Task Force has formally recommended that the Golden State offer payments of up to $1.2 million to every qualifying black resident. They held a public meeting in Oakland over the weekend. They voted on the final set of recommendations. It's going to be sent to Sacramento, the capital. The 9-member panel called on the state to offer its black residents a formal apology for slavery in addition to the payments. Here's Barbara Lee. She's a Democrat from California. She says, reparations are not only morally justifiable, but they have the potential to address longstanding racial disparities and inequalities. Now, the panel's recommended payments break down by types of historical discrimination. For example, black residents affected by redlining by banks. Redlining used to be certain areas would not receive bank loans, you know, and so they would redline them out. Anyway, those residents affected by redlining would receive $3,366 for each year they lived in California from the early 30s to the late 70s. Black residents could receive about $2,400 for over-policing and mass incarceration for each year they lived in California between 1970 and 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. In total, from these and other payments, a black Californian who is 71 years old and has lived in California his entire life could receive up to $1.2 million. According to the analysis, you know what? It's going to be interesting. First of all, they don't have the money to do it.
Well,
that's number one. Number two, it would be kind of, I'd be cynically enjoying watching them try to figure out who gets what.
There's a few more things you left out, though. There's caveats that they've actually proposed this along with the cash payments. There are things like reduced mortgages. Okay, maybe, whatever. What was the other one? And then there is the one that I love, that they repeal the three-strike law. You know what that is, right? The three-strike felony law that if you arrested and charged...
You don't get out after the third one.
Exactly.
They were,
now, you tell
that.
Me what slavery has to do with you going out and constantly breaking the law.
Right. No, it's... It absolutely... First of all, they don't have the money. It's going to cost them about $900 billion to do it. Or something, some strange number, if they really were doing. They don't have anywhere near the money.
You know what, Paul? I don't think it's about the money. I think it's about the promise. We're getting close to another election year.
That's right. They know they're not going to be able to do it.
We can string this out and get votes.
There you go.
And then we'll say, right. Well, listen, we're getting ready to pass this, but if you vote for these people, it's never going to go through.
Yeah. We're keeping our dear friend... Our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi, waiting on the line here. He has called in, and Angelo, great to hear from you again, buddy. I don't think New York's going to have a similar law to the reparations law there in California, but this is really becoming weird.
Well, Kathy Hochul's doing the same thing what California does, you know.
Is she looking for reparations too?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they're looking, we're talking about that. They want to take away our gas stoves now in 2026. Any new buildings, they're going full bore with the the Green Deal.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about that, too.
You know, I forgot to mention that in California, they've got a deal about not selling any non-electrical vehicles after a certain year, I believe.
Yes, we're headed and for that direction,
New York, too. Yeah. And then, you know, these places wonder why people are leaving. Come on.
You can't stay here.
Why are you leaving us?
You know, you can't. I mean, people should be filing lawsuits. I don't think. Why nobody has yet? I mean, this is supposed to take effect in 2026. This new budget that she proposed that they're going to do away with this and that.
Yeah, you're going to get a knock on your door, Mrs. Ceresi. We understand you still have your stove.
I still have my stove, right.
Yeah, here's the kicker. Here's the kicker of the whole thing. Biden and his green energy. Have you ever seen any solar panels at the White House?
No, that's a good question. Where are they?
And plenty of gas, plenty of stoves are in there, too.
How about at Biden's three or four mansions? Does he have solar panels?
You got to ask him. None of the reporters ever asked him. What's your store?
This is so weird. No wonder. We were talking earlier, Angelo, I don't know if you heard us, talking about this ABC Washington Post poll. It's absolutely devastating news for Biden. Trump is now beating him rather easily in a rematch, and his Biden's numbers have tanked even worse.
Oh, I know. But you know what? They're still trying to put the poor guy, Mr. Trump, President Trump, in jail. They still keep pushing more and more. This is going to be more women coming out of woodwork saying he did this or he did that or, you know, everything.
Yeah,
just going to push the issue even more.
Well, so the Republicans are bringing Tara Reid. Talked about her as well. She's an accuser of Biden. She said Biden assaulted her, and they got her coming up to testify before Congress. So it's just, you know who's worse, right? How many women are you going to bring in? How many women am I going to bring in? You know, how many lawsuits can I throw against you? How many can you throw against me?
Right. I mean, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, you got till 2024, up until this election in 2024, they're going to drive this country down even more, the Democrats. I mean, like I said, they're doing this reparations as a tool to buy votes, you know? Because where are they going to get this money? Either California or New York State, where are they going to get all this money to do that stuff?
Yeah, well, they're not going to get the money in California to pay reparations.
No, and it's just a thing to buy votes. That's all.
Exactly.
Just bring these people along.
Right.
Just like they did with the tuition, you know, to pay off the tuition bills of these students. You go and take a loan. Nobody, I had to pay my loans off, you know.
Exactly.
Nobody helped me out.
We are, in fact, going to be talking about the Supreme Court, which has a decision on student loan handouts. A coalition of six Republican-led states sued the Biden administration, seeking to block its debt forgiveness plan and calling it an executive branch overreach. So the Supreme Court is set to rule on that. It'll be kind of interesting where they come down on that kind of a thing, you know?
And another thing, too, they're supposed to rule on that New York SAFE Act that Kathy Hochul implemented on us, where you can't carry anywhere. You have to have a sign in the building where the owner can say you can carry inside and everything like that. And
you talk about open carry guns or carrying or just carrying
concealed
guns.
Yeah, weapons. You can't carry anywhere. So you can go from your car to your house. You know what I'm saying? This is what she has implemented here in New York State. So, and that's supposed to go before the Supreme Court also.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I mean, you know, they got all these things going. How about they can't even find, they can find the young airman for, you know, distributing documents, secret documents and stuff, but yet they can't find the person who leaked the Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade. They can't find that person. How is that?
Yeah. I don't think they want to bring it out. That's my guess. Even the Supreme Court, Samuel Alito, one of the Supreme Court justices, says he's pretty sure he knows who's the leaker. He said, but I don't want to say it if I'm not 100% sure.
Right, and how about Ocasio-Cortez inciting New York, over here in New York City, with that person that was in the chokehold?
And the subway, the New York City subway. Was that a veteran that was holding the
Marine veteran? Yeah,
yeah, holding that homeless guy down.
Right. I mean, what's going to happen if this veteran gets charged? There's nobody's ever going to help anymore. Nothing. Nobody will do anything.
I'll be honest with you on that one. I have some mixed feelings, and the reason I say that is, did that homeless guy physically attack anybody?
Physically,
I don't think so.
That's the key. I don't care what he did in the past. If he didn't physically attack somebody,
he was spitting on people.
I absolutely understand, and he's got a record. But look, did he threaten anybody in terms of their personal health or safety?
I don't know. That's got to come out through the investigation.
This is why I'm not so much against them looking at this case.
But you see what we're doing here? We want an investigation. We don't want people marching in the streets right now because they've already made up their mind.
That's right.
Because the person was colored.
I agree.
That's right. Ocasio-Cortez, who's a congressperson, right? Congresswoman there, she's talking like that.
Yeah, she's already convicted him.
Investigation, right?
She's already convicted him. You're right.
Right, she's already convicted him. How about Maxine Waters, who she used to say, go after them, do this. She used to incite riots, but nobody goes after these people.
But Paul, when you say, did he actually put his hands on anybody? No. But when somebody gets in your face, nose to nose, and is barking and yelling in your face, somebody will come up and say, hey, buddy, back off. And when you tend to get them to back off, they're going to strike against you, and that's how things work. Listen, I'm sure he tried to cool him down, and he wouldn't cool down. But we'll never know, I guess, unless there's video out there.
They have some video, but I don't know how.
But he's already on the ground by then.
All-encompassing. It is.
But
they're
usually
going to be relying on the testimony.
That's when
of the
somebody else gets killed.
Him.
The good Samaritan, you know.
Absolutely, the guy that was holding the guy down I'm sure he did not intend to kill him. He intended to stop him.
Right.
But I do think I can understand. Excuse me. I can understand the reason for a hearing on it at the very least.
We got to have an investigation. Yeah,
investigation.
Absolutely. But,
that's what I mean.
What happened to this country, you know, in this country right now, you're proven guilty right away. You're not innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
They've taken that away.
Well,
and then
no question about it.
Fox just showed an off-duty police officer was shot and killed in Chicago.
We shouldn't even have to get to this point where people like this homeless guy are threatening and spitting on people. We have lost control of our cities. This is obvious, and this is what happens.
Right. Nobody's
this is the inevitable result.
Nobody's protesting against the violence in the subways.
Right, and nobody's protesting on that, are they?
No.
Nope. Here in Rochester, we've got what they call crash and grab. What they're doing is they're stealing vehicles like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Stealing vehicles, going into places. Just this past week, they tried to stole a vehicle, tried to crash in a gun shop, right?
Wow.
But they didn't get in. But this is what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
Right? But nobody, you know, nobody's saying, well, how about that? Nobody's protesting that.
Yeah.
They're learning how to steal vehicles by going on the internet.
Let me ask you, now you live in Rochester, New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's far enough away from New York City. But do you have a big homeless crisis there?
Well, we've got a homeless crisis here in Rochester, too, yes.
Is it
yep.
to the point of, you know, you're walking down downtown and these tents are set up, or is it more...
Well, they've moved this one place, I guess, to another area, but they condone, they're pushing this, you know, by condoning this stuff, you know, moving them from here, moving them there and stuff like that. But, yeah, we've got a homeless problem here in Rochester, too, believe it or not. I think it's happening in all over your cities.
Yeah.
All your democratically controlled cities, because they tolerate all this stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of putting, taking care of the perpetrators, they're making them into martyrs. They're making them into people that, you know, that you have to feel sorry for. No, this is now, you know, I don't get it. You know, it's like here in Rochester now, they want to sue, or they're suing the car manufacturers for the cars being stolen. Right?
You're kidding.
No. Our mayor in Rochester is
the cars are not secure enough. Is that what he's saying?
Right. They don't have the control or whatever in the vehicle.
I see.
You know, and for not manufacturing a vehicle like that, they're suing those two car manufacturers.
Oh my!
Those damn vehicles
instead
should go
in.
Instead
of going after the perpetrators,
yeah, exactly,
and putting them in jail. It's just like the gun. A gun is an inanimate object, right? It's somebody uses it to kill somebody or kill something, right?
Right.
There's a human being behind it. Put the perpetrator in jail and throw away the key. But they don't do this. They want to rehabilitate these people. You're not going to rehabilitate these people, and you're not going to stop these perpetrators.
That's true.
Until the law gets changed. You know,
we got so many laws on the books in all of these places, and they don't do a doggone bit of good.
No.
If you start taking away guns from people that can protect you, like they say, if guns are outlawed, then only outlaws will have the guns.
Right. Or just like, you know, suing a car manufacturer or a gun manufacturer. You build a house, or you buy a house from a builder. The builder builds this house and doesn't put a theft deterrent on your house. Your house gets broken into. Do you sue the home builder, too, now?
Yeah.
Are you going to sue the car manufacturer for a drunken driver? Are you going to sue because somebody used the car? Are you going to sue them? That never happens,
right.
Does it? It's starting now.
Yeah, it's getting crazy.
Before we let him go, I've got to bring this up.
Sure.
Earlier, I posed a question to our green energy president, Joe Biden, on all his green energy stuff. Are there actually solar panels at the White House? There are not, but there were. Another great president that was in office in 1979, Jimmy Carter, put 32 panels up and made a speech saying, into the year 2000, this relic behind me will still be heating the water in the water house. In 1986, Ronald Reagan said, get that crap out of here. But wait a minute, here's the kicker. Do you know where those panels are today? In a museum in China.
Really?
Yes.
That is really interesting.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Thank you so much, Angelo, for coming on, my friend. And look forward to talking with you again, possibly next Monday.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy.
Take care.
All right, sir. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we, as promised, the Supreme Court starting to issue some big decisions. We're going to talk about them.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
I love that music. Ed always comes up with some great music, you know, as we come in and out.
That was an old 80s hit. Tainted Love.
I like it. I like it. So, we're here, by the way, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. on the Great Tan Talk Radio Network. That's Eastern Time. Thank you for listening. But if you're not able to listen to us for every show live, thanks to Ed, all of our shows are on our website. He puts it on a podcast. Go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, and click on the podcast button at the very top. Ed's got all our shows, starting with the most recent show at the top. You will know who the guest is and the top 10. Bless Ed, and you can listen at your leisure. OurFreedomWorks.com. Okay. The Supreme Court is about to begin issuing decisions every Monday until the summer. After hearing arguments in several high-profile and hot topic matters, here is six of the most highly anticipated opinions. The Biden student loan handout, all right? And a coalition of six GOP-led states sued the Biden administration to block its debt forgiveness plan, and they call it an executive branch overreach. While tough questions alone are not a clear sign of how the justices might rule, the 6-3 conservative majority appeared skeptical of the Biden plan and suggested he may have exceeded his authority. Another one, affirmative action. Students for Fair Admissions claim that policies at Harvard and North Carolina University discriminate against applicants who are not from certain minority groups on the basis of their race. In particular, the group claims that Asian and white applicants suffer. So that's another one coming out. Another one is workplace speech rights versus LGBTQ plus rights. At issue is whether a business owner can refuse to create any website for a same-sex wedding based on her religious views, despite a state's public accommodation law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. It's kind of like, to me, like that one where the bakery didn't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding. Yep. I think it's similar to that. Yep. We'll see how they come up on that one. Let's see here. I'll tell you what, there's a couple others we'll skip over, but the Big Tech, Section 230, free speech access to the internet as we know it could be transformed depending on how the justices weigh in on cases about holding social media companies liable for the content that is posted on their sites, okay? And a couple of others that are important. All right, but before we get to our top 10, Ed, I did want to touch base with you on how our beloved baseball team, the Tampa Bay Rays, are doing. They were playing the New York Yankees in a series here in Tampa Bay. How did that turn out?
Well, in the short term, 2 out of 3. They took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. It got a little interesting the first night when one of our players was hit by a New York pitcher. Not only once, but twice.
Aha!
Because the series before came
the
up.
The same guy got hit twice? Well,
same guy.
They must not like each other.
Actually, when he first came up, whacked a home run, and the next time he came up, they hit him with a pitch. And the third time he came up, they hit him with a pitch, but it was an accident.
Aha!
But good news at the Trop, yesterday's big crowd, 36,000, highest crowd in 7 years.
Wow! Boy, I hope we can continue to keep good numbers. But the Yankees are a big draw. They're always a big draw.
Yeah, but we've been doing well on that, too. I mean, in that series, so.
Well, excellent. All right. Glad to hear it. All right, Ed, it is time for our top 10. I think this is an interesting one. This comes from Forbes magazine, and they have listed the top 10 vehicles with the longest lifespan. All right. I guess they just have to take a look at how long somebody keeps it before they sell the car. That's the only way I figure they can do this. It says, we'll see which are the 10. Let's see if you know which is number one, okay?
I already told you mine.
You did?
My guess.
Well, hold on to it. Let's see if we find it. All right, here we go. Number 10. The Honda Pilot. 27% plus of original Pilot owners keep the Honda Pilot for 10 years or longer. Pretty good. All right, number 9. Number 9 is the Toyota Highlander Hybrid. Now, according to iccars.com, 32% of original Highlander Hybrid owners keep them for 10 years or longer. All right. Number 8. Hey, this is an old one. I don't even know they make this anymore, the Ford Taurus. Original owners keep the full-size Ford Taurus for an average of 8.3 years. It says good thing, too, because it's discontinued or about to be discontinued.
Means it's an antique.
It is an antique. Number 7. This is an oldie but a goodie, the Honda Accord.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. One of the reasons it's difficult to find affordable Honda Accords in the pre-owned market is that buyers keep them for an average of 8.3 years. Number 6. This one surprised me a little bit. The Chevrolet Suburban. The king of carpooling and towing boats and trailers is the Suburban. Owners hold on to a full-size Chevy Suburban SUV for an average of 8.4 years. Number 5.
Yeah, that was a workhorse. Yeah. That was a big vehicle.
Big vehicle. Yeah. Yep. Number 5. How about the Ford Explorer?
Yeah.
That's another one, right? Explorer owners hold on to their rides for an average 8.4 years. The Ford Explorer was completely reinvented to improve fuel economy. It's now built on a lighter car-like body instead of a truck frame and features an efficient 6-speed automatic transmission. All right. Number 4. The Toyota Avalon. The large and in-charge Avalon sedan suits its owners just fine as they keep them for an average of 8.6 years. That's the second longest period among passenger cars. Okay, number 3. You ever hear of the Toyota 4Runner?
Yeah.
The rugged
midsize... It's an SUV.
Yes, the rugged midsize truck-based 4Runner can take a beating and keep on going for an average 8.8 years... of ownership. Powered by a stalwart V6, it's adept at traversing rocks and blazing trails and even driving into radio stations when properly equipped. Number 2. Wow, talk about an oldie and goodie. Chevrolet Corvette.
Really?
The Chevy Corvette. The venerable Corvette does not receive a complete redesign very often, which helps explain its car average of 9.0-year ownership. All right. That's pretty good, is it not? All right, Ed.
Well, actually, I didn't. I when we talked about vehicles, I didn't know we were going to make it model. So
okay,
problem. I'm going to change mine.
All right, well,
I'm going to go with the Ford F-150.
Roll the drum. Well, you're not too far away. It's the Ford Expedition.
Oh, okay. Well, it's bigger version of the Explorer.
Yeah. Redesigned for the first time in several years, the full-size Ford Expedition remains the classic big SUV with strong towing abilities and a voluminous interior. Buyers keep it for an average of 9+ years, according to iccars.com. So there you go. All right. Thank you so very much for being with us. We will be back on Wednesday. Drive safely. And remember that freedom works.